In this talk, we invite industry thought leaders from around the world to talk about leadership in the facility management industry, to share lessons learned from their experience and discuss topics relevant to the industry. This talk will help establish an inspiration path for people working in the facility management sector by giving them key factors to success and growth and create a platform to share knowledge and experience within the community. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. We are back, Leaders Talk, with one of the great leaders in the facility management industry. It is our pleasure to have Mr. Stan Mitchell here with us. Again, to remind everybody, Leaders Talk is for you to learn from the experience of people who are part of or contributed hugely to the industry, have a lot of stories to share with you. They will, of course, we will aim through this program to motivate you and, you know, ensure that you are energized and you look at always the positive things and grow in your career. And that is very important for us. We will wait, Stan, for your introduction until more people join. Now we have, I can see we have 22 more people are joining, but really thank you very much for joining us, Stan. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Ali. Always good to have a chat with you in particular, but always good to share whatever knowledge we think we have with the rest of the community.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think people started, hopefully they will be starting chat. And normally we have people from all around the world, not just from the Middle East. People like to attend this session and, of course, learn and get inspired and motivated by experts like you. We already had around 5 sessions before. We had Duncan earlier. So we are honored to have you today. We will start in few minutes. So let's chat before I ask you questions, because I think we're going to give them another 2 minutes for everybody to, join us. Let's start at 2:03. So now the weather in sunny Scotland is not sunny anymore, right?
Well, no, actually, we've got a beautiful blue sky in Scotland and the sun is shining, but the temperature is minus 10.
How come? I thought that minus goes with the snow.
Well, no, it's too cold for snow right now. So it's very, very cold. I'm sitting in my office and there is no water because all the water pipes outside are frozen.
So normally how to avoid that? You put a chemical in the water or what do you do?
No, you insulate it. And normally because the water pipes are fed into the building from deep underground, normally they don't freeze. So this is quite unusual. This is the first time this has happened in several years.
Wow. All right. Please, guys, you can introduce yourself, the company you work for in the chat so we know who are our participants today. Definitely this interview will be posted in MEFMA YouTube channel with the other episodes of Leaders Talk. And again, we are happy to have Mr. Stan Mitchell with us. I think, Stan, we know each other since what, 2008?
Well back. A long, long time.
Because I remember we met in Abu Dhabi in one of the coffee shop in Arraha Beach once.
Yes.
That's as early as we met.
Yeah. Well, that was talking about how we established MEFMA.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Long time ago, yeah. So we have Mr. Palestine, I know this lady. She is from Kuwait, if I remember. She is in Al Shaheed Specialized Services. We have, oh no, maybe Palestine. No, she's in UAE. We have Amr Saeed from Egypt. We have more people joining us from Kuwait, Abu Dhabi. Yeah, Palestine is from Abu Dhabi. And her name is Palestine, linked to Palestine as a, you know, the country that we know. They are very nice, Oliver. We welcome everybody from Palestine and from all over the world. We have Donna from Scotland, somebody who knows you very well, would like to learn more from you today. So we have more people joining, and I think now is the right time to start, Mr. Chan. So we will start by taking the opportunity to give us a little bit of brief about yourself. How did you start in FM? What is your background? And then we're going to ask more questions as we go. Go ahead, Mr. Sam.
Okay, it's obviously a long story. My first job was in farming. I went into farming up in the Highlands of Scotland, where it was very harsh conditions and snow guaranteed for several months of the year. But I have to say, probably the best job I ever had. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was ideal because you did everything. When you're on a remote farm, if something didn't work, you had to fix it. And your day was dictated by events as they happened, irrespective of whatever was planned. And of course, there were animals to look after, which were always unpredictable. And you had to get to know them and their behaviors. So there you go, the perfect introduction to working in FM, because it's a bit like FM today. And all the stakeholders that we serve and the individuals, and you need to get to know them and you need to try and communicate with them as best as you can. But I then went on from that into engineering. So my professional discipline is engineering. And I worked in the Merchant Navy for many, many years. And in the Merchant Navy, it was basically doing an FM job, but the building was moving all the time. And that really was where I learned to be an engineer, because when something on a ship doesn't work properly, you can't call in the plumber or the electrician, you do it yourself. So that was an education in terms of my technical capabilities. And then I moved from that ashore into FM proper, as we would describe it today. And for me, that was a very easy transition. And I've been now involved in facilities management for over 30 years.
Wow. So from the Navy to the new job, I think after the Navy, when it was actually when you went from a Navy to real FM on ground?
I went to FM from the Navy in early 2000s.
Okay. So what did you establish, Key FM, or what was your...
No. My first FM job was, I joined a company called Wang. And Wang were one of the very early makers of computers.
Okay.
And Dr. Wang, whose company it was, he was the man that invented the integrated memory, and he was the largest private shareholder in IBM. So I worked for them as a company, and my first job was to build a brand new manufacturing facility on a greenfield site, establish an FM regime, recruit the people, set out the design of the building services, etc. So it was actually quite an easy transition from working on and shipping to working in a building. But what I did learn and I had an experience was more about the building fabric and how that all came together and had to be maintained. So from that company, I then went and established Key Facilities Management.
Which year it was?
1990.
Oh, so because you said 2000, and you meant maybe earlier than that.
Yeah.
You joined Wang.
That was the 1980s.
Wang, I think baby probably right. Okay, because you said 2000. Okay.
All right. My apologies.
Because I came to think as. No, I thought you were in FM even earlier than my 2000. When you said 2000, I got a little bit.
No. 1980, I started my own company as a consulting company. And we now do operations, we do training, we do technology. So, yeah, 1990 was when I started Key Facilities Management.
So at that time, you already have wealth of knowledge and you said, let me support more than just one organization.
Well, facilities management was a brand new concept back at that point in time. It only emerged in the 1980s. And for me, I was quite surprised that it wasn't a recognized discipline. And I thought it made absolute common sense and logical that all of these support services be managed under one umbrella. And that was the beginning of facilities management as a discipline. And I got involved in what was originally called the Association of Facilities Managers. And I started a community in Scotland that eventually became the British Institute of Facilities Management. So I was involved in establishing the British Institute.
Wow. So that was, after the 1990.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I think you have very rich career. And, in 1990, I remember I started talking about Ethelm. It was only 2006, 2007, after working in a maintenance department in Etisalat for 5 years. So there is, I'm sure you've been through a lot of, challenges during your career, especially when you set up very early FM consultancy back in the 1990, all the way until today. KFM is growing and growing, and there is a huge potential. So we need to tell us more about, some stories that you dealt with customer. How did you educate the customers? I'm sure you have a lot of effort done on the global level in setting up BFM and setting up global FM, which is an amazing leading the whole world in FM. But ultimately, we want to hear more about your experience in handling customers.
Well, it's an interesting question, and I can give you some interesting answers that are very relevant today as they were back then. I was very, very enthusiastic about this new thing called facilities management at the time, and I realized that when I started my company, I had to make a living out of doing this. Nobody had ever heard of facilities management. Yeah. So I had to do an awful lot of door knocking and talking to people. And I would explain what the logic is behind facilities management to business managers. And they would all agree with me, but nobody would ever buy anything from me because they didn't understand what it was I was selling. And that was one of my first lessons in being in business. That whilst I wanted to be in business to do facilities management, I had to learn how to sell what the offering, the value that I could bring to organizations. And that's not a skill that I had in any way, shape, or form. And I'll jump forward a little bit here, because the very first conference I spoke at was a conference back in 1990 in Madrid. And wow. It was the first FM conference in Europe. And I went because I had had experience on trying to get out there and sell a service effectively, although I was just a one-man consultant at the time. I did a presentation about another hat to wear. So in FM, we all come with certain hats that we are very competent in. It might be engineering, it might be design, it might be cleaning, yeah, whatever it might be. But I was sharing with that audience that we had to understand, in order to promote FM, and this is what's relevant today, we have to understand we also need to be marketeers. We also need to market what we do and the value that it brings. And then we need to sell it. I don't mean for cash, to our stakeholder groups, to our the individuals that are our customers. We have to help them understand what we can do and how we can do it and the value that it can bring. And we're still, as is MEFMA, we're still working very hard trying to do that today to the governments, to the industries and commerce that we serve.
I agree. I think it's not an easy task, but starting very early. I set up my consultancy, I remember, in 2011, and still it was very challenging to show them the value, because I think the biggest impact we as an FM professionals we will have is to go as early as design and influence the design, validate the requirement, look at challenges, life cycle costing. What do you think? How can we convince the client that we need to be there in the design? We need to hire the right experts in
it. There is absolutely no doubt about that in my view either. The greatest value FM can bring to organizations is starting at the design stage of these facilities. That has always been the case. It's much easier to, I think everybody that walks into a new building has looked at what they walk into and said, well, that wasn't quite how I envisaged it when I looked at the drawings. We were fortunate, and it's changing in the UK, where FM now is being seen as a distinctly different discipline and has a seat at that design table. And the, one of the things that was very good in my career was in Masdar City in Abu Dhabi, key facilities management were appointed by Foster's and Partners as the FM design contributors to the design of Masdar City. So we were there sitting at the design table at the very beginning. And the other people around that table, interestingly, when we turned up, who are you? We are from Key Facilities Management. And what is it you're here for? What do you design? And my answer was that we actually don't design anything, but we're here to ask stupid questions about what you are going to design. And if there's a stupid answer, we all have an opportunity to make it better. And that wasn't taken terribly well, you might imagine. But but the opportunity then was to contribute towards designing things that are maintainable, designing things that have whole life costing behind them, and just asking questions to make the professionals, the architects, the surveyors, the engineers, to think twice about what they're putting forward on the table. So I like to think we had a little bit of influence on what is now a thriving Masdar City in Abu Dhabi.
Great, great. So that's good. And I think there is a lot of, need for FM consultant into design. And I think we don't have enough FM consultants available to support, the projects that are happening. I think there is a big opportunity for people. But how to become an FM consultant? So I'm going to another way, but I think maybe some people with a lot of operational experience, they say, I have a lot of operational experience, but I don't know how to become an FM consultant. What does it take to be an FM consultant?
Okay. I can talk to this as well, because we've employed several operational people in FM who are very competent at FM operations. And they have all had that kind of concern. No, I'm not a consultant. I'm an ops guy.
Exactly.
And the difference is simply taking all of that knowledge that you might have gained during your years in FM and presenting it in a different way. It's the same information, it's the same knowledge, it's the same competencies. But when you're a consultant, you're measured on the value that you articulate. Yeah. It's not about the value that you deliver, okay? So in order to justify an invoice at the end of the month as a consultant, you have to have given that client, that demand organization, value in a completely different way. So it's about describing how to do it rather than doing it. And that's still the same in my book within FM companies, where FM really takes place at strategic, tactical, and operational levels. Yeah. So typically, if you're in FM operations, you're operating at that tactical operational level. So you're leading the operations specialisms and technicians, cleaners, whatever it might be. But for consultants, it's about operating at that strategic level, but with a knowledge of the tactical. How do you do it? It's one thing saying this is what you should do, but this is how you do it and how you bring it into reality, and that's the bit that's different. And sometimes FM operational people find it very, very difficult to make that change. And it's all about communication. It's all about written word. It's all about giving the people that you're advising the confidence that you know what you're talking about. And that's probably one of the most important parts.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I see the guys that are attending today, they are from different industry, from real estate, from hospitality, hospital, healthcare, so many. And I think to be involved in a project, even if you are going to take care of that project, during operation, when you get involved during design, your role is different. You don't talk like the way you talk in operation. You don't want to criticize people. You are not there to validate their design capacity because they know better than you. You're there to look at operability, maintainability, life cycle, and you need to ask, as Mr. Sam says, simple questions that might lead to another question that might, you know, show the overall value for money or the life cycle assessment rather than initial cost of the project. So I think it's very interesting to start thinking about how to involve operational people into project that as early as design. Did you come through, like, I think there is a standard in hospitality, Hilton and all these big groups. They always get involved in the design of a hotel. And I think I looked at their checklist. They have an FM aspect of this. Did you come across something like this in your career? Did you deal with hospitality, hotels, standard?
Yeah, very much. And the hospitality sector, the people that come from that sector, have a very valuable role within an FM context. It's not a completely different environment. It's just a dimension of what you would call today FM. If you run as a facilities manager, if you're responsible for meeting rooms, events, catering, etc., these are all core skills within the hospitality industry. And these skills require different skills than they do in what today we tend to call hard services. So hard services are all about, I always describe it as, they're all about black or white. It works or it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, you need to make it work. You need to fix it. Whereas when you get into the soft services, it's all about people and it's all about interaction with people. And that's where the hospitality sector in particular has those people skills much, much better than people who tend to come from engineering companies or cleaning companies or whatever. And when I talk about strategic, tactical, and operational, it's the operational people who are your customer service people, because they're the people that interface with the users of your services, the users of the buildings, etc. So those are the people who, if they don't behave and communicate appropriately, will give your customers the wrong perceptions of an FM regime. Yeah. And we've got a lot to learn from the hospitality sector in that people communication side of FM.
Interesting. So we go, Stan, to the next question. What lesson guideline you can share with our attendees that would consider a learning experience through your career? If you think about something, because I'm sure we have a lot of people who are starting their career, some are in the middle of their career. What are the learning experience through your career?
Okay. I'll give you an answer first of all from a personal.
What we don't need to do, how can we grow?
From a personal perspective, I've always tried to hang on to three core values of integrity, honesty, and tolerance. Integrity is about yourself. Whatever you do in your career, it will stay with you. So do it, be honest, be sincere in what you do. But the thing that's quite important, I find, in FM is tolerance. Not everybody's going to agree with you. The people that work for you, your peer group, the customers that you serve. Yeah. And if you can be tolerant of other people's actions and communications and whatever, then you've got a better chance of getting your message over in any way you can. What I say to people starting in FM is, first of all, nobody in FM has got all the answers to anything. Exactly. Okay, we are such a diverse sector. We cover a multitude of technical, commercial disciplines that none of us are experts in all of these things. From a personal point of view, 2 ears, one mouth, use them in that ratio. Listening is very, very powerful if you genuinely listen. and hear other people's opinions, hear other people's problems, read other people where they need support in terms of FM leadership. And then you speak, and you'll speak much with much more authority. And that can be just as applicable to somebody working in a reception or a cleaner or a technician as it can be to a line manager, as it can be to a strategic consultant. So these personal values to me are what people should hang on to in the first instance. And if you can act and behave in that manner, then you back it up with education and learning. So there are lots of good training programs from organizations like MEFMA and others. There are lots of good educational programs in further education and higher education. So you need to absorb the skills and the competencies that we all don't have and broaden them to give you a very good base in facilities management. And you will end up being perhaps an expert in one or two of those. And therefore, one of the greatest skills, I think, in a good facilities manager is knowing what you are, i.e. those core skills that you've got. But more importantly, perhaps, knowing what you're not. Don't try and be something that you're not. And go and find help, find support from organizations like associations. That's where you can share the challenges that you've got, the problems that you've got, whatever. And there will always be other colleagues in your peer group that have come across that and found solutions before you.
I agree. I think this is for the new incomers and for the existing people. You always know what you are not capable of doing and seek help, and maybe you learn from people. And I totally agree with you. And I think this is what we need. But what about creating this passion? Because sometimes, you know, your energy goes up and down, up and down. How can you maintain the passion about it? Because some people switching the job because they lose the passion. What do you say? How to keep the passion?
Yeah, I've always said to people, facilities management is a negative measurement. When everything is working and everything is good and everybody's comfortable, you're invisible. When everything starts to not work or they're not comfortable, then you become the person to go to. So that tends to be driven by negative views, negative perceptions. Yeah. I go back to what I said at the beginning, that we have to have an element of marketing and sales in what we do in FM. And that's what counters that. We have to make sure people are aware of the job that we do, not in necessarily in our language, but how it relates to them and their workplace and their role and their activities. And we used to talk about in FM, you have to be an interpreter. So yeah. When you want to go and talk for an increase in your budget, don't talk about the technical issues in FM that are required. Go and talk about the value that that can bring to the organization, and a finance director will listen to you. If it's about a working environment, don't go and talk about the humidity and the temperature levels. Go and talk about, are you comfortable to the user that's having a draft or feels too cold or feels too hot? So these are subtle skills that we need to develop as we get into that tactical level of management so that we communicate effectively. Whatever the problem is, And this goes beyond FM, this goes into life in general. Whatever the problem is that you face, communication is part of the problem. So in an FM context, think about that. How do we communicate better if we're not getting the message across? And if there's a problem, I always recommend facilities managers, when you have a problem, a situation that you need to resolve, the first person to talk to is that mirror in the washroom. What could I have done different to have avoided that problem in the first place? And then when you understand your role and your responsibility at whatever level you work at in FM, you can then communicate to others, hopefully more effectively, and resolve these issues before they become issues.
I think it's a great insight, especially the mirror. You have to. I think we sometimes we overreact and we say, the customer is behind us. He doesn't like me. You know, I have to change my job. He's making my job like hell. But ultimately, this is how we put things in our mind, the negativity. Maybe we have to talk about ourselves. Know what this client, why he is criticizing me. Maybe he has a pressure that I need to help him in solving. So I think it's people have to improve communication, have to appreciate. You have to appreciate your customer somehow, sometimes, so he appreciates you. Thank you very much for the opportunity to work with you, you know, how you start talking to people.
Exactly. One thing I found in my career, and this is my secret weapon, if you like, if I have a problem with an individual or a department or an organization, it's very, very powerful to go and get to the right people, whoever they are, and ask them for help.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for people to say, no, I'm not going to help you. And you ask them for help. How can I make your life better? How can I make this environment better? How can I make financial management better? You know, whatever it might be. And you'll find if you go and confront those challenges and ask those individuals for help, they'll give it to you. And then it's down to you. If you can help, if you can't, whatever. But at least if you've asked the question, 9 times out of 10, you'll get some kind of sensible answer, hopefully.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you understand that I have a capacity, can you help me? And sometimes your help is you're just asking them what you expect from me. And that is very important. We go to the next question. Very important insight. I'm sure I'm going to look at this, you know, recording again and again. I'm going to be learning more. Abbas is saying, hospitality sector best suits in the industry. They know tolerance management, customer care, housekeeping, upkeeping, property. Okay, nice. Thank you, Qamar Abbas, I think from Pakistan. So he is appreciating the hospitality because he worked with them, which is good for us. And I think even as Asad is saying, we need to insist on meeting the customer. And we agree with that, that you need to meet the customer more frequently. And Mr. Sanchez, you have to be a customer sometimes. You have to see, ask yourself, what this customer expect from me? How can I make his life better? So let's go to the next question. What is the key to be successful and growing in the industry? I think you've answered it in a way, but still, let us ask it in another way. What is the key to be successful and growing within the industry as an FM practitioner?
The first thing I would say, pardon me, but I've been talking about what facilities management is for over 30 years around the world. There's still this question when people ask you, what is facilities management? I've always said, you put 10 facilities managers in a room and ask the question, you'll get 10 different answers. And that's actually okay, because facilities management, unlike other built environment disciplines, doesn't fit neatly into a box. So if you say you're an architect, everybody kind of knows what architects do, although there's different types of architects. Engineers, there's different types of engineers, but people, if you say you're an engineer or an architect, okay, I've got it, I understand who you are. But you say you're a facilities manager, and people still don't quite understand, what is it you do? So you see that situation where it's not a simple descriptor, either as a problem or a benefit, because for me, FM doesn't fit neatly into a box. Why is that? Because every organization defines FM and what it needs from FM differently. And that's where we need to be agile and flexible. For some for the financial services sector, as an example, IT infrastructure now is not something they would tend to give to FM, because they have a whole function that's totally dedicated to nothing else, because it's the lifeblood of that particular industry.
Yes.
In other organizations, for us as a company, we deal with IT, and that's not a problem, but it's a different type of organization. So I tend to talk about what is true FM, and true FM is that function that operates at that strategic and tactical level, whereas facilities services is the function that tends to operate at tactical and operational level. So getting an understanding about what it is we do and what it is we're talking about is essential. And that is why I got involved in the very early days of the BIFM. I support MEFMA, I support some other associations around the world. That is why I got involved in the British Standards Institution to create standards, and then latterly into creating the ISO FM committee. Because all of the work that we do in these standards bodies or in our professional associations is about helping people understand the skills, the competencies, the definitions of what facilities management is, so that hopefully as you go to work in an organization that does some of what FM can potentially do, you have some awareness, you have some of those skills and competencies that you can develop to make sure that you do the good job. And leadership, for me, is all about defining what the right things to do are. And facilities tactical management is about doing those things properly. And those are the reasons I think that FM itself is so interesting. I think it's also, those are the reasons why it can be so frustrating. And if you don't have broad shoulders, you need to get the positive vibes from the people you work with. FM might not be for you, because it's never going to be smooth sailing. Every day will be different. There'll be a different challenge round each corner. You either enjoy that and you thrive on solving those challenges, or you don't. And if you don't, there's another career for you somewhere else.
Great. I think very good insight. We have the last question, then I have more question in my mind, actually. But let's ask the last question is about not you, your team. What are the leadership quality you expect from your team or you need from your FM team? You as a leader, of course, you're going to have leaders across your organization. But what are, when you want to hire somebody, what are the leadership quality you need from your team?
Well, I think I go back to what I said earlier a little bit about know what your weaknesses are. Don't try and lead those. You're not the right person to lead them. Know what your qualities are and try and find your role in utilizing those to the greatest strength. But leadership has to be about passing knowledge to those around you, making yourself redundant. And I don't literally mean that, but making yourself redundant in terms of what you have to do that nobody else can do. So it's about communication. It's about support. It's about developing people around you. And if you do that, first of all, your life becomes easier because you're not the single point of contact for whatever it is that your core skills are. And secondly, I sleep well at night because I see people thrive. I see people grow. I see people accelerate and leave my company and go and get better jobs somewhere else. That to me is what good leadership is about. It's not about you. It's about you and how you can help the others that are there around you. And that applies at every level in FM. It's how can you help your colleagues? How can you support the development of the younger individual that comes into the team? How can you make them feel comfortable? How can you find out what their strengths are to make them be successful while they can go and develop maybe some of those weaknesses that they haven't developed previously in their career? So it's all about giving rather than taking, in my view.
I agree. So the guy you will hire has to have giving, more of a team player, more of an honest person, maybe communication skill higher. Very amazing. I think this is very nice for all of us to be more transparent with our client as well. It is very important. As he says, Mr. Afak, empower the team. And I think this is what understand why was meaning by making yourself redundant. Empower the team. Don't do everything yourself. That is very important for all of us. Now, you know, you're leading the industry for all these years. And I think now, after the COVID, and even today with the massive growth, we have a shortage of FM, especially at the strategic level. We're going to have shortage. We already have shortage. Everybody try to implement FM in the traditional way. Go and put an asset register. Let's tag it. Let's do the standard operating procedure. Let's deploy people. Let's run. Let's make customer satisfied. We don't know if customer satisfied unless he complains. How can we do it better, Stan? We need to, you know, educate people, especially the big mega project guys, the people who are sitting, putting legislation and looking at FM as something, I think it should evolve. So what, I'm going to keep it to you. I'm not going to speak more. I want to listen from you about what is FM, how we can go to the next stage as an FM practitioner.
That's not an easy one, because as an individual it's different than as a community, as a sector it's different, you know. So where I got involved in the standards world was this: the standards world is a platform to engaging with governments, to engaging with industry and commerce and leaders. That this thing called facilities management has incredible strategic and tactical value to bring to organizations large and small. So that's a platform to do that at that level, in my view. When it comes to individuals, it has to be to get education, further education, schools, universities, to understand true facilities management, not contract management. I remember speaking at a university to a class of students, a mixture of young graduates and mature students. And I was asked to go and talk about contract management. And at the end of it, the students told me I've just contradicted what one of the lecturers had told them the previous week. In its entirety. And that to me is part of the problem. We have leaders in education who don't perhaps fully understand facilities management in its truest form. So are they helping or hindering in terms of how we educate young people, young smart people who want to make a career in something like FM, which, as you said earlier, is one of the fastest growing disciplines in the built environment sector in the world today? And then how do we do that within our organizations, within our FM teams? And it's about giving people time to learn, giving people time to buddy up for experience with experienced individuals, rather than just sweating them to get, you know, 10 hours a day out, work out of them. As a sector, we have so much more to do. We've achieved a lot in the last 30 years. We're talking about an industry now that's worth over $1 trillion per annum, but we have so much more to do and so much more value to bring to encourage people to make facilities management a career of choice. And I'm sure you, Ali, know, I certainly do, lots and lots of people who have come from those more traditional professional disciplines into FM. And why are they still here? Because it's one of the most rewarding, challenging, frustrating jobs to be in. But every day is different. Every day gives you something to achieve, and you can go away at the end of it and feel, well, I did something good today, you know.
Exactly. I agree. And I think collaboration is important, where we create the right platform and influence decision makers. Because I think the feedback loop on existing building to the new building is not happening enough. We keep designing building, unfortunately, not fit for purpose, and sometimes even over design, because we don't take the right actual load calculation. For example, most of the pump are oversized. because they put so much risk factor. Sometimes they even put 30-40% risk factor. And this impacted the whole life cycle costing of an assets and sustainability and so many aspects. So my next question is the solution for us to go to the next level? How can we use technology to get away from this traditional FM and use, you know, centralized subject matter expert, or, you know, use FM expert in a centralized way so we can influence? I'm sure technology will help us. We have a lot of data, and data are very expensive, but for us, they are kept in files or kept in a computers, and they are not made relevant. What do you think about the FM industry and technology and data?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say is that the future of FM is completely interacted with technology. So technology is going to be part of what FM is going forward. I did a talk at one of your confexes a few years ago, and the title of that was Nanosecond FM in the Autonomous Building. That today is absolutely feasible. The building could tell us when it needs our help. So that's what technology can do. However, technology is as intelligent as the desktop that I'm sitting in front of. Technology itself does not give us the solution to what we do in FM. Technology is a tool, which you quite rightly said, that will give us information from the data that it captures that, if interpreted properly, can add tremendous value to what we do in FM. It will make us more efficient and effective. It will make our buildings operate more efficiently and effectively. So technology is definitely part of the future. But don't think technology, you put a piece of technology in and it solves the problem. Look at all the people who bought very expensive CAFM technologies over the years. And it does a job, but it doesn't solve the problems. It still needs us to interpret the information. And that's the same with the latest technologies, the AI, the IoT, etc. So yes, technology is part of the future for sure, but it's that interpretation. And about in key facilities management, about 5 years ago now, we hired a data scientist as part of our team. And people were, why on earth do you want one of these guys that sits in front of a screen all day and manipulates code and information data? And that's exactly why we did it, because you need we are the interpreters between a customer and the people that use a building, potentially. Yeah. That data scientist is the interpreter between the technology data that we can capture, and how does that translate into meaningful information to let facilities management do its job better?
I agree 100%. And the result is a sustainable community, sustainable development. So I think it's a great insight, and I think people are enjoying the discussion. We have a friend, I'm not going to say his name, but I know him very well, and he's asking a question because I think he has a huge knowledge, especially in healthcare facility management. He's asking, what advice would Stan give to professional FM who moved to FM consultancy? So he's finished, he was a service provider, he was a client managing, on behalf of client managing hospital. Now he moved to an FM consultant. What the advice he would give them to grow in this career?
The first piece of advice, if you're going to be successful in consultancy, is you need to change your language. Okay, yes. You have all the knowledge, the technical knowledge that you've gained in the healthcare sector over many, many years. But FM is about solutions. So the solution to a nurse who cannot easily access a piece of equipment or use it or whatever, it's not about the technical nuances of that piece of equipment. It's about the ergonomics of how the nurse interfaces with a piece of equipment. I'm using a fictitious example. So the change for that individual is in language and communication rather than substance and knowledge and expertise. So it's about how do you, in a different way, instead of coming and solving the problem yourself, as you might have done in operations, you've now got to try and explain to people how they can go and solve the problem in a better way or make it more efficient or whatever. So it's really just, I think we mentioned this earlier, it's about communication and how you present that information and knowledge to enable others to do it. As a company, I started off as a consultancy company because that's what I think I have some value to offer. And I do the same, that's why I enjoy training, for the same reason. But the only reason Key Facilities Management got into operations was that, having given my clients good advice, what they perceived as good advice, they simply asked for my help about making it happen because they didn't have the resources or the skills to do it themselves. And so that was how we became an operations company, is that, in other words, we don't just talk about it, we do it. And both parts and within Key, we learn from each other all the time. So there are people, and some of the people I've noticed that are on this call, I've got as much to learn from them as they have to learn from me. And if you're going to be a good consultant, you have to have that mindset. You have to be aware you don't have all the answers. But as you evolve in a consultancy sector, if you like, you get to meet other consultants who, and they've got their experiences. So the one thing I would say, if you're going into consultancy, go on your own is absolutely fine, but you need your network, because you don't have all the answers, and how you use that network. And that's where organizations like MEFMA, where you can mix with your peer groups, create those networks amongst yourselves, has tremendous value. And that was the reason I started the very first FM association in Scotland, was simply because there were like-minded individuals in the sector I worked in then, which was the technology sector, who were facing the same problems I was facing, and we could help and support each other.
I agree 100%. Without network, the FM consultant will not have all the answers. So the answer are by creating the right network, making sure you understand the client that you want to work with. And that is very important also to become an FM consultant. You need to understand his business, not just your business as an FM specialist, but you need to understand what is his goal. And you as an FM consultant, you need to help him in setting up the right FM strategy to enable his business to grow. Very fruitful discussion. And I think, again, technology is a tool that FM consultants should use these days. They should advise customer. We need to urge everybody to use technology, because if we continue to stay away from technology, we will be behind other sectors. So implementing technology, this is my last question, I'm going to end. Implementing technology, how easy it is, how hard it is, and what do we need to implement technology in our, as an FM company or as an asset owner who wants to use FM to manage his facility management services?
Okay, I would answer that question in two ways. One is, I've seen so much money, time wasted by people buying technology, thinking technology will add the value. It won't. Very often, it's how I describe, people buy sledgehammers to crack a nut. And what I mean by that is, they'll buy very powerful, very good technology systems like CAFM systems, and they'll use 10% of it. And we all do that with Word and Excel and other technologies. So don't go and invest in the sledgehammer when you don't really need it. And until you truly understand how you can get value out of technology, I would strongly suggest don't go and buy anything. You can start with an Excel sheet and see what it is you're trying to do. And then when you know you need to do more, that's when the proprietary technologies start to have a role in your organization. My second answer, I've seen so many good technology systems put into organizations, but they invest in the technology, but they don't invest in the people to operate it. And if you don't put the right resources in place, if you don't train them properly, and let them get that greater than 10% out of that technology, you've wasted your money. And 9 times out of 10, when I see technology doesn't work, it's for one of those or both of those reasons.
I agree 100%. I think the invest in people, because technology without people using the technology and understanding the reason will be very, very wasted. We have a person asking, we need the lecture. Actually, this is a YouTube recorded session and it will be posted by MIFMA. You can always refer to it. It will be on the internet. You can always watch it and enjoy and learn more and more as you watch it. And I'm sure you're going to benefit from it. So it is not something that we're going to, there is no material to share with you. It's a lecture and it's Leaders Talk by MIFMA. You can always Google it and you're going to find it. What are essential tools that you should carry in your briefcase as a leader? I think we've answered this. Well, you don't need a briefcase to carry your essential leadership tools. What do you think, Stan?
What is the greatest skill? Was that the question?
What is the essential tools you need
essential
to carry?
Essential tools.
Yeah, in your briefcase as a leader. What is the tool as a leader?
Okay, I'll go back to something I said earlier. Integrity, honesty, and tolerance.
Yeah, exactly. Honesty, integrity, and tolerance. And that is very important to understand. You know, you have to always have a big heart to apply tolerance.
Be the best you can be, you know, but if you put some measures of and standards of your own in being the best you can be, then people will respect that. And we don't, in life, and we certainly in FM, we don't have all the answers. So if you follow those kind of principles, you will learn. You will learn every day. And every time you learn, you've got a bit more knowledge. And then that knowledge in terms of leadership is what you can in due course impart to others who work alongside you, work for you, whatever.
You see, I remember, you know, the definition of passion is two things: keep doing what you're doing, become good at it, and do it for a good cause. It's not just for you. You're helping people. You're doing something for the society. So I think, you know, this is the ultimate approach if you want to be a leader. So I think we enjoyed one full hour with you. And I know there is no enough time to take this discussion further, maybe future session, inshallah. But I would like at the end say thank you very much. I want to leave the mic to you to say the last word, whatever you want to say to the people who are actually happy. And I can see that they are got a lot of benefit from the session. What do you want to say to them last?
I genuinely want to say to them that you have skills, you have competencies, understand what they are and leverage them. And where do you want to go? If you've got a vision, if you've got a passion, if you've got a dream, go grab it. There's nothing stopping you except for you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We really enjoyed the time with you, Stan, and very informative. Thank you for sharing your experience. Thank you for giving us more energy to take our job and improve and hopefully learn more from other people. There is no limit to learn. This is another session of Leaders Talk with a great leader, Stan Mitchell. Thank you very much. Thank you for the attendees and thank you for the team organizing this session. Thank you all and enjoy the rest of your day and see you soon, Stan. See you soon, Sean.
Indeed. Thank you, Ali. Thank you, MIFMA.
Thank you very much.
Dear MIFMA family, we hope you enjoyed today's talk. Stay tuned for more inspirational and motivational talks.